everybody, and welcome back to another edition of The Christian Contrarian. I'm Gary Wayne, author of the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. This is episode 11, Satan, in our continuing series to understand who the players are in the Bible so that we can better understand what happened in prehistory, how that affected our history, how it affects us today, and how is it relevant to end time prophecy. In today's figure, Satan is probably the most significant of the key players of the spurious and evil forces that oppose us and oppose God. And if we're going to understand prophecy, to understand exactly what's going to happen, we're going to have to understand all of the players of prehistory, what happened there, and how that helps define the allegories and the sequence of events that will take place in the end time. So who was Satan and how far did he fall? So the first thing that we kind of understand about Satan is that that's not a name. It's a title and a meaning and a position, and I would argue a degraded position from how far he fell. And we're going to understand completely by the end of the show today just how far did Satan fall. It's a significant fall. So let's begin with understanding the term Satan. And Satan is rooted in essentially three words out of Hebrew, which are Satan and Satana, so H78, 53, 54, and 55. And essentially what that means is adversary of God, an opposer of God, an accuser and an attacker, and an arch enemy of God. And that word arch is going to be something that we're going to come back to, so that within the definition of Satan, 53 and 54, arch is not there by coincidence. And it's a significant sort of detail that we're going to discuss a little bit later. And 78-55, Satana is also rooted in 78-53, Satan, meaning opposition and accusation. So it's kind of an expansion or an extension of that original meaning. And what's important to understand coming out of this is that Satan is understood by the spurious forces as the nemesis of God. And that's a term that has more of a meaning to the polytheist believers than people of the Christian religion or Judaism. And what I mean by that is nemesis comes out of Greek mythology as someone who enacts retribution against those who show arrogance and or hubris towards the gods of the pantheon, or as we would understand it, as the fallen angels. And so as the nemesis of God, he enacts retribution against Christians and God's chosen people, Israel, both the northern and the southern kingdom. And we need to let that resonate, because it's a very, very important understanding as we start to dig into who Satan is and why the people who follow them actually follow him. And we may not totally understand those reasons, but this starts to give us a sense of their loyalty and why they do what they do. And so Satan is leading all of the retribution against those who do not submit to the pantheon of the gods and those who still rule this world for a short period of time. And that's why we have genocides and holocausts. And that's why there's going to be genocide in the end time. There's going to be two. And probably even genocide on a lesser scale as we lead up to the last 7 years. We're going to have a genocide in the first half of the 3.5 years and another one in the second half. And there's also going to be some additional Holocaust going in there as Israel awakens to remember who they are just before the midpoint of the last 3.5 years and then into the last 3.5 years as we lead toward second Exodus. And so when we're understanding Satan, we also need to understand Satan as it's understood in the New Testament. And in the New Testament, Satan, G4567, is rooted in 7854, which is the Hebrew word. So the Greek word for Satan, for the most part, comes out of Hebrew. And that word is connected to Satanus, also directly sort of connected as that understanding of the Greek word Satan and Satanus. It has a Chaldean or a Babylonian origin for the devil, which is another description for who Satan is, just as Revelation 12 talks about, and we're going to talk about a little bit later. And the Greek New Testament definition for Satan includes, which is very important to understand, that he is the prince of spirits, which are angels and or the gods of the pantheon, and of demons. And so he's the devil and he's Satan as what we've described him as to this point in time. So as we move on in understanding who Satan is, we need to have a little bit closer look at the word devil. And devil is the Greek word diablos, which means accuser, slander, prince of demons, author of evil, and one who leads people away from God. So in perfect sort of symbiotic meaning and relationship and connection and direction as the Hebrew meaning. So, but that makes sense because it's partially tied into the Hebrew origination, just as it is tied into the Chaldean origination, which of course where Nimrod had ruled both before and after Babel. And that's no coincidence. And that's why we need to take the etymology and the meaning of these words to heart, because it's going to help us understand things as we move forward. So as we're talking about Satan, the devil, I'm going to bring in an Old Testament set of verses that it kind of strikes me as very important in understanding as to what Satan is doing and what his current role is, as opposed to what his role was when he was originally created. So I'm going to talk about Job 1:6 and 2:1. And it's quite interesting that the sons of God, the same term that's used in Genesis 6, appear before God. And we're not told whether these are loyal angels or fallen angels, but we assume that they're loyal angels. And that they're also called sons of God. And in some translations of the Bible, depending on which one that you're using, it might say angels. And generally, if it does say angels, you'll have an annotation, and at the bottom of the page, it's going to say sons of God. And we know these are the sons of God because of these verses and many others. So if you want a stronger answer for the definitive understanding of these as being angels, get a hold of me. I have a handout on how we know the sons of God are actually angels, and it'll go step by step in a very detailed account to make that case. And Satan presents himself along with the sons of God in heaven in Job 1:6 and 2:1. And this is very, very interesting. And, you know, you could probably take a meaning out of there that the sons of God are the same sons of God that are in Genesis 6 that Satan actually led into rebellion. And you could take that as an understanding of this concept that these might be the sons of God that are governing the earth both before the flood and after the flood, although there may be different players depending on the understanding of who was put into the abyss. And I believe only the impassioned ones and the worst of the watchers were put into the abyss for their crimes with the violations against the laws of creation. So, but what we do now is get a connection here between the sons of God, Satan, and the creation from the sons of God who Satan led in Genesis 6, which are the Nephilim, which are the creation of the angels. And it's a very, very important concept, and we've covered them off in a fair bit of detail in shows previously. But I'm just drawing some of these connections. So as we understand all of that, and we understand that the Nephilim were created to enslave humankind and or to wipe them off from the face of the earth, and or only to keep them for around like cattle and for ritual sacrifice, then the whole understanding starts to come into place as to how big of an enemy Satan is to humankind, the angels that follow them, and the creation that they created in terms of the Nephilim and the Rephaim after the flood. So it starts to put things into a little bit more context. Now, out of the New Testament, we get a lot more titles for Satan. And it's why we need to put all of the verses together in as we study the Bible, because it just brings more meaning and context. So in John 12, we're told he's the prince of this world. That's a significant title, and I'm going to come back to that in a second. And in Ephesians 2, he's talked about as the power of the air. In 2 Corinthians 4:4, we understand he is the one who blinds humans of God and Jesus. Why? Because he opposes Jesus and God, and he's trying to lead humankind astray. And in 2 Corinthians 11, we understand he's an angel. Doesn't have an angelic name, because angels' names tend to end in EL, as in Michael or Gabriel, as recorded in the Bible. But all we get is Satan, at least in the English translations. And so we now understand he's an angel. And also in 2 Corinthians 11, he is transformed or disguised as an angel of light. And just as those who follow them disguise themselves similarly as beings of light, children of light, sons of light, ministers of light, however you want to call it. So all of the polytheist and Gnostic secret societies all call themselves children of light. And this is why, because Lucifer, as they like to call him, is their God. And we're told very clearly in the Bible that this is the leader. So again, everything is lining up, Old Testament, New Testament, and all of the meanings are telling us more about Satan and what roles he's playing. So let's dig into this a little bit further. So prince is recorded both in Hebrew and in Greek. And in Hebrew, it's Rishon, which means chief ruler, patron or patriarch angel or father angel or head angel, and ruler of rulers. And that would include the watchers he would rule over, who we're going to talk about in just a second. And in the New Testament, prince goes back to the word archo. And archo as in ark, as in archon. And I'll add to that in a second. And archo, 757, it means first in rank. So prince is first in rank. We've talked about Satan as being the leader. It means power, just as Ephesians talks about Satan as being power of the air, chief ruler. And Archon is 785, which is essentially, you know, the same word as archo, just in a verbular participle of it. And Archon means prince, magistrate, and ruler. So all of the meanings are lining up quite nicely here. So I talked about watcher in a minute ago, and I want to talk about these as also archons, as at least they're called by the polytheists. They're called rulers, they're called archons, they're called the Gregori, they're called many different names that all refer to the watchers. And in this understanding that these archo names apply to Satan, we need to understand then that he's an angel and he's an archon angel. He's an archangel. And so that whole word arch, whether it's architecture as in masonry or archives as in lost knowledge, all of that, and I won't go into all the different spin-offs, but just think about the applications of arch and in relationship to Satan. And remember, all of this is either used to worship the pantheon of gods or lead people away. So that word is kind of an occult word, as I understand it, with all of the hidden meanings that talk about Satan. And so watcher shows up in Daniel 4 three times. And watcher is described as an angel in Daniel 4 delivering important messages of governance from the throne of God, and also in reference to governance and governing, just as watchers are understood in First Enoch and other accounts as being rulers of the antediluvian world and were the sons of God out of Genesis 6. And that's the Hebrew word Ayir, and it means guardian or governing angel for humans. So guardian and governing for humans. So that whole understanding of watcher now starts to line up, and it's rooted in another Hebrew word, Ur, which means opening of eyes or to watch and or to awaken. And so again, even the root of the word goes back to watcher, and it goes back to this governing aspect that's talked about in Daniel 4, which lines up again with all of the outside understandings of who watchers and archons and rulers were. Talking about the same celestial mafia with Satan as being the crime boss, ahead of all of the rebellious angels. And continuing with the sort of understanding of the titles of Satan, understand that in Daniel 10, Michael is also known as the chief prince and an archangel. And we know he's an archangel because in Jude 1:6 he's called an archangel who fights the devil, who is Satan. So he's like Satan's counterpart. And what's interesting about that is both are archangels, and Michael, you can make a good case for this as being the restrainer, and there's also a good case for the Holy Spirit, but Michael also fights against the beast empires, which are sponsored by Satan and will be a significant part as the end time empires of the 10 kings, and then the eighth one, which is the Antichrist empire, come out of the empires that we've talked about in previous passages out of Daniel 2, Daniel 7, and Daniel 8. So when we're talking about archangel, understand Michael is the counterpart. So what they do with this understanding now is they now cast Michael in almost like degrading God to Michael's level, because in the polytheist religions they believe in duality, which is this equal power. And it's Michael who is holding Satan off, not God, until God wants to put Satan in the abyss at the end of the last 7 years. So what's going on here is this is, you have to start to understand the basis of the understanding as to the dualism and polytheism and how they manipulate the meanings and the players in the Bible to confuse people and lead people astray, which they're very, very successful at. And Michael's name, obviously, it ends in EL, just as all angels do, whether it's Gabriel or others. And we know that Satan was an archangel that was around God, because archangels surround God. And just as Gabriel in Luke 1:19 is an angel that's around God as an archangel and described as an archangel in the meaning, as you take that back into Hebrew and to Greek, you also have the seven archangels that I think are archangels that are around God in Revelation 8. So again, you have to get a consistency to the meaning, and we already established that Satan is an archangel. So at one point in time, he was around God. And he's also, one of his titles is called Power, which is Greek for exousia, which means government, authority, ruler, just as we were describing the watchers of Daniel 4, Genesis 6, and described in Enoch. And again, I know Enoch isn't biblical in terms of accepted canon, but it runs about 99% consistent with the Bible. And it's a common term, this understanding of watchers, just as Gregory is how watchers was translated from the Ayir Hebrew wording for watcher into the Greek versions of the various books of Enoch. And this is all really important to understand as we understand then how Satan the archangel is also, as we understand in Revelation 12, more than just an archangel. He's actually called the serpent and the dragon, as well as the devil. And what's important to understand about that is that in Isaiah 6, we get seraphim angels described who act as ministers before God in the fiery stones of the altar before God. They actually use, one of them uses a rock out of there to set at the lips of Isaiah to take away his sins in a minister or a priest-like fashion. And when we take the understanding of these six-winged angels that seraphim are back in its meaning, it comes from the word seraph, or seraphim is the male plural, and these were fiery serpent angels, and we understand in Revelation that Satan is called the serpent and a dragon, and you put wings on a serpent, and that's a flying serpent or a dragon. So this is the angelic understanding of a dragon. So the serpent, dragon, devil. We now have an understanding here that tells us that Satan was seraphim and archangel. So this is a very unique and a very powerful being when he was created. And he's the dragon god and the archon and a watcher as well. Just as you have around the world the Nagas out of India, you have feathered and plumed serpents in North America, you have the dragon gods of China, and on and on and on. This understanding of the parent gods, and particularly the top seven spurious gods that are a counterfeit of the seven archangels of Revelation 8 that answer to Satan, these are the spurious ones as opposed to the seven that answer to God, is the same sort of counterfeit, which is a constant thing that Lucifer is all doing, which we will come back to again as we close out this show. And so we're building how high up Satan was before he fell. Now, we also know in Ezekiel 28 that he is called an anointed cherubim and a covering cherubim, because cherubs, they cover and shade the throne of God, but they don't walk amongst the fiery stones like the seraphim do. But yet Satan, who is seraphim, also is described elsewhere in the Bible that he walked amongst the fiery stones. And so now we have this sort of understanding, well, is that really the same being that is in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14? Or is it a different being? And I'll answer that in a minute. But I want you to, but where I'm building right now is I would say that it is, and that this was part of a title. So now we have him as an archangel, seraphim, and a cherubim. And this is how far he fell. I mean, this is a totally unique being. He was created perfect in his creation. And now he is degraded to Satan status. And we're not even sure of his name, at least as the English translations go, but we're going to cover that off as well, what I think is actually Satan's name from a biblical perspective. And so when I talked about counterfeiting, what Satan was doing in the rebellion was trying to counterfeit everything God has. And he wants to be like God, so he wants to be a counterfeit God, counterfeit omnipotent head God, as God is totally Alpha Omega and totally over everything. And he wanted to have a throne like God and have it in a heaven like God and to have a realm like God. Everything he wants to do is to counterfeit. That's why everything looks like an evil twin or an evil mirror image, everything that he's doing. That's like he's going to have a false, he has a false religion, he has a false antichrist, or a true antichrist, I guess. I'm using a double negative there. And everything is a counterfeit, which you need to understand as you understand prophecy, how the counterfeit all comes in. But that's a different show to do just on the counterfeits. So he wants to be able to rule over all of the rebellious angels that rebelled. And we know by at least Revelation 12, that there's going to be at least 33 million, because in earlier on in Revelation, it says there was 100 million angels. And in other passages in the Bible, it'll say they're uncountable. But we know by Revelation 12, a full third will rebel or have rebelled before. But certainly by the last 3.5 years, we've got at least 33 million. So he wants to rule over all of them. and also all of their creations that are offspring and future creations of angelic beings and humans and other animal hybrids, just as they violated those laws of creation in the antediluvian epoch. And that's the realm that he wants to create, and that's the realm that he's going to ask people to fight for as they describe the God of the Bible as the evil God, understanding and remembering what I said earlier, he disguises himself as an angel of light. And so Christians are going to be described as the mundane ones who can't evolve into godhood, the evil ones and the follower of the evil God. So how do we know that Satan is the same as in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28? It's really quite simple. Jesus told us this. And I like to place everything around what Jesus said, wherever I can, particularly in prophecy and doctrine. And like I say, anywhere I can put things around Jesus that has the authority, I think you get clarity. And now you can also get an semblance of how to understand the other passages. Don't do it the other way around. And in Luke 10, 18 to 19, he tells us that he saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning, just as Satan falls in Ezekiel 28 and in Isaiah 14. I think it's very clear cut. But then he goes on. And then he says that he is going to give us power over serpents. That's a seraphim angel. That's the watchers. Not all of the angels, but the order of seraphim angels, and particularly Satan, and power over the enemy, which is referring to Satan and also the ones who follow him and the ones who oppose God and the ones who are trying to destroy God's creation, the Adamites and humankind. He is the opposer and the enemy of God and all humans. And he is the one who led all the weak angels astray and also is the one deceiving humankind with his false religions that he is equal to God and that he is the good God and the God of the Bible is the evil God. This is the turned upside down inverse relationship that we need to understand why people would follow Satan, because they actually believe they can win and win this realm to be able to live in a separate universe or realm or planet with the watchers and Satan as being their leaders. And this is the same individual, Satan, who was not sent to the abyss. He was degraded to Satan status as a Satan title to sift and test humankind that we talked about earlier. And he wasn't sent to the abyss because I don't believe he actually had sex with humankind and created offspring. Otherwise, he would have gone to the abyss. Now, he will go to the abyss in Revelation 20 for 1,000 years and then off to the lake of fire. But he is the one that was left out of the abyss to lead all the other angels and demons, who are the bodiless spirits of the Nephilim, in the time of testing and in the time that will fulfill all the names of creation written in the book of life that are to be saved until the numbers are fulfilled in the ordained time. So again, everything is perfectly consistent as the Bible tends to put things together. And so we know that Satan is one individual. And I understand that in Isaiah 14 and in Ezekiel, it sounds like there's two individuals being talked about. A king, which is probably a Nephilim king, certainly a descendant of the Nephilim dynasties that we've talked about in previous episodes, but also Satan, because humankind weren't in around the throne of God. They weren't there at the time of creation, and there's just too many details that would be in contradiction. This is because Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 37 are part of what I call a dual prophecy that have a common denominator of giving important prehistory details, prophecy for a period shortly thereafter, and then prophecy again for the end time. And I've got a series on that if you'd like to get a hold of that. And it's a very detailed series that'll walk you through the whole concept of what dual prophecies and show the examples are. But in all of this understanding in Isaiah 14, where I'm saying this is Satan just as he's Satan in Ezekiel, understand that he's called Lucifer there, which is a very odd thing to do. Because Lucifer is an Italian word substituted for a Hebrew word into the English language. And only in the King James Version Bible do we get Lucifer, and that is the God's name that Gnostics and secret societies call their God, Satan, not Lucifer. We shouldn't call him Lucifer, in my opinion. Who we should call him is who Lucifer, son of the morning, is translated from out of the original Hebrew, which is Hail El Ben Shakar. Hail El, notice the E-L as a name, as in Michael or Gabriel, son of the morning. I think that's the name. If that's not, it may not be his only name, but I think it certainly is the only one that we are provided in the Bible. And so I would prefer to call this individual either Satan or Hail El, as in our understanding of who this individual was. So this was a being that was almost, you know, right behind the creation of the Word and the Holy Spirit, but not obviously equal in the combined power and the power of God, because he was cast out of heaven and Jesus actually saw that taking place as the Word of God. So that ends part one. I'm going to continue this discussion on Satan and getting a better understanding of how it affects prophecy in episode 12, the next episode. And if you want a handout, I have a series of six on Satan, as well as a couple other ones that I mentioned. Mention them by name. Get a hold of me through the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. That's Genesis 6, that's the number 6conspiracy.com. That's my website. And on there's an email. Or contact me through Facebook under Gary Wayne, or at Twitter at GaryWayne63, and I will send you those documents. So until the next show, thank you for listening, and hopefully you found the information valuable in better understanding the players in the Bible.